Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Passover and Easter to everybody out there tuning in. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Get Yourself the Job. I hope that wherever you were able to celebrate the holiday, if you were celebrating, that you were able to do it in a meaningful way. I know this was definitely an unusual time and way that we probably all spent it. And my thoughts and heart goes out to everybody out there. So lots of love to everybody. And before I introduce you to today's guest, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting staffing solutions throughout the United States. They do have offices in California and New York, as well as other offices around the country, and can help you with any and all of your potential staffing and recruitment needs. So please do keep them in mind. Now today I have with me on the show, Peter Economy. Peter is a best-selling business author, ghostwriter, developmental editor, and publishing consultant with more than 100 books to his credit and more than 3 million copies sold. Peter's latest book, Wait, I'm the Boss, launched on March 1st of this year, was published by Career Press. He also helped create Unlearn, Let Go of Past Success to Achieve Extraordinary Results. Everything I Learned About Life, I Learned in Dance Class, The Leadership Gap, What Gets Between You and Your Greatness, Managing for Dummies, Story Mapping, Discover the Whole Story, Build the Right Product, The Management Bible, Peter Eisler's Little Blue Book of Sailing Secrets, and many more. He's the leadership guy on Inc.com and served for many years as associate editor for the Leader to Leader magazine, published by Francis Hesselbein. Leadership Forum in New York City. Peter taught MGT 453, Creativity and Innovation, as a lecturer at San Diego University, and is on the National Advisory Council of the Art of Science Learning, and is a founding member of the Board of Sports for Exceptional Athletes. He is a graduate of Stanford University with majors in economics and human biology, and Peter has worked closely with some of the nation's top business, leadership, and technology thinkers, including Jim Collins, Francis Hesselbein, Barry O'Reilly, Peter Senge, Kelly McElhaney, I think I got that one right, Jeff Patton, Marshall Goldsmith, Marty Kagan, Lolly Daskal, Guy Kiyosaki, Emma Cipolla, William Taylor, Jim Kiltz, Gene Lippmann, Blumen, Stephen Orban, and Ken Blanchard, as well as many others. Wow, that bio was a mouthful, Peter. You definitely tested me today. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
That's a real pleasure, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love this. So I'm excited to have you on. I think this is an interesting time to be discussing this topic of your latest book, Wait, I'm the Boss. I know that around the country, of course, millions of Americans have been applying for unemployment, let alone on the global level. There's obviously been global and economic impact of what we're all going through right now. And I think many people probably are finding themselves in the boss or leadership roles who might not have always been there. So tell me a little bit about how this book came to fruition and a little bit about some of the tips in it.
This book came about because I once was a new boss myself. You know, before I became a writer, I used to be a manager, and I used to manage at one point up to 400 people. But I was never actually trained in management. I was never taught how to be a manager. Back when I became a manager, I was expected to just learn from watching my boss. And I think I was fortunate because I had a great boss, and I learned some good skills from my boss. Unfortunately, a lot of the bosses out there, a lot of managers out there, aren't so great. In fact, Gallup has done surveys that show that bad bosses are the number one reason why people leave their jobs, why they quit their jobs. So I think it's really important, and this is what really motivated me to write this book, was to get the skills of good management, of even great management, in the hands of the new bosses, the new managers who really need it the most.
Yeah, I think it's such an important thing. I remember when I first started running my company about 15 years ago, I didn't know how to manage two sticks, and it can be very challenging. I feel like for those of us who haven't had prior management or leadership training, you can easily fall flat on your face. So let's talk about how not to fall flat on your face when it turns out you're the boss.
Well, I think, you know, some of the mistakes that a lot of managers make, whether they're new or well-established managers, are kind of similar. The first mistake is failing to delegate. So, you know, management is all about getting things done through others. So you've got a staff of people and you need them. You work with them to get things done. You know, the goals of the organization, the goals of your department, the goals of your team. You know, you need your team of people to help you get things done. You can't do it all by yourself. But the mistake that many managers make, new managers, established managers, is they try to do it all. They try to do everything themselves. And I know myself, when I was a manager, I often fell into that trap myself because, let's say there was a report that needed to be done that I had to get to the executive team. And I was assigned that report. And I would look at that and I would say, now, is that something I should do myself? I think I'll do it probably two or three times faster than if I assign it to somebody else. And it'll probably maybe be two or three times more accurate. So maybe I'll just hold on to that report myself and not delegate. But that's a huge mistake. And that's, you know, something every manager needs to do is to delegate and to help train the people who work for them, you know, give them those tasks that will help them advance their own careers. Will give them the experience they need to be better employees. So that's one of the big mistakes that managers make.
Let's dive a little bit more deeply into that, because I know what a lot of people might be scratching their heads and thinking is, well, gosh, you know, Peter, that sounds great, but how do I even begin to ascertain which tasks to delegate and which tasks to hold on to? I know for me, when I started off as a manager, I really struggled with that because I would try to control my team members rather than trusting them. You know, it's this ebb and flow because you would give somebody a responsibility, but then, you know, God forbid they make a mistake and something falls through the cracks, then you as a manager have egg on your face. So how do you navigate that dance of, you know, balancing what to give away and what to keep?
Right. Well, to start with, there are certain kinds of tasks that are really the ones that should be delegated, you know, right off the bat. So, for example, if it's a repetitive task, like something I was just talking about, like a report, a weekly report, for example, that's the perfect kind of task to delegate. Also doing research. So going out and doing research, gathering data, doing detailed work that takes a lot of time. You know, that kind of thing really shouldn't be done by the manager. That's something you should delegate to other people. But there are other tasks you should never delegate. For example, you don't want to have your one of your employees give performance feedback to another employee. That's something that's your job as a manager. And there are confidential things, you know, salary negotiations, those kinds of things you would never delegate to an employee. But it's almost a trial and error kind of thing. You know, given that you've got those two kind of categories of possible tasks you can delegate, and you've just got to find out what the skills of your employee are. What are they good at? What are they, you know, what are their strengths? And what areas do they need to be strengthened in? So I would say, you know, when you delegate, you play to their strengths. Here's something that this person could probably do very well. So let's give them that task. Here's something that someone else on my team could do really well. Let's give them that task. And you know, delegate. You know, take a look at the skills your team has and then delegate accordingly.
And I know that that's probably one of the greatest gifts that a leader can have is learning how to harness a team member's strengths and how to avoid or mitigate weaknesses. So in your experience as a leader, when you're managing over a team of 400, that's quite a lot of people. How do you begin to determine who has what strengths and then to utilize those to the best of your ability?
Right. Well, I think, you know, part of it comes from when you're hiring people. So let's just say you've got a team of, let's just say 10 people. So some of those people you've hired yourself as a manager, or maybe if you're a new manager, maybe you inherited them. I think a lot of it has to do with sitting down with that person and actually getting feedback from them. So what is it you like to do? Show me some things you've done. and actually assess the work that they had done. You know, what have they, what kinds of tasks have they done? Have they gone out and gathered data? Are they crunching numbers? Are they really great at spreadsheets? Do they crunch numbers? I think it's a matter of just getting a lot of one-on-one time with that employee and finding out what their strengths are and then testing those strengths. So again, when you delegate, you don't delegate a huge responsibility all at once. I would start by delegating a small task, a small part of a task, and seeing how the person does. You know, some kind of quick reaction, small task that will cycle within a week or two at the longest. And that way you can sort of experiment and see what kinds of strengths each person has on your team. You know, if it's not obvious from their resumes or their what they've done, you know, on the job previously.
And let's talk for a moment, Peter, because obviously right now in this moment, we find ourselves in a very different time than we've ever been in before, personally and professionally. And of course, the one glaring thing that's impacting a majority of people working wherever in the world they might be working is this remote working. Would you handle being somebody's boss differently during these times? And if so, what might you do differently than at other times?
Yeah, I think there is a different way of managing when it's remote. And I, you know, some companies have been experimenting with this for quite some time. It's not a new thing for many companies, particularly tech companies that have been working with remote employees. But you do have to manage differently because when you're with your team, busy with your team, you can have a lot more opportunity to actually talk and gather feedback from people as you're on, you know, at the office on the job. So I think when you're a manager and you're managing remotely a team of people, you've got to communicate more. You've got to reach out a lot more. You've got to set up a lot more communication channels and opportunities for communication. So, you know, establishing regular meetings, maybe meeting more often via Zoom or whatever platform you want to use, using the tools, you know, different communication tools that are available to you. Slack, these different kinds of IM messaging kinds of programs platforms that companies have, but reach out a lot more. I would say even over communicate when you're working remotely and just keeping tabs on everybody, make sure that they've got the support they need, making sure that they've got, that they're doing what needs to be done.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. I think one of the key attributes that I've noticed of the amazing leaders I've had the privilege of either working with or alongside of or under is good communication. I think really great leaders are simultaneously good communicators and that they learn how stylistically to communicate with their team members because different team members too have different styles of communication that they respond to and it's not a one-size-fits-all model.
That's exactly right, because I think that's something else some managers tend to do. And I think some books, you know, see books or different websites that kind of say, here's the five ways to be a better manager. And, you know, it really is situational. I think every person is different, obviously, but everybody responds in a different way to different feedback, to different ways of managing. So you've really got to tailor your management style to the individual. And that way you'll motivate them better. They'll be more engaged in their job. They'll respond better. And you won't create the walls that often get created when someone feels like they're just a number. They just feel like it's an impersonal. You don't really care about them. You know, when they don't feel like you care about them as an individual and want to take the time to really understand who they are or provide them with that feedback they need, then they aren't going to give all that they have to give to the job or to your company or to your customers.
I couldn't agree with you more, Peter. And one of the other things that a guest who's joined us on the show several times, Dr. Paul White, has shared. Are you familiar with Dr. White's work?
I'm not, no.
He has some really great points that I personally have found to be helpful, and it ties into what you just said, and that's in his work called Appreciation at Work, and he talks about understanding how to appreciate your employees, and I think now more than ever, understanding how to appreciate people when they're working remotely is equally as important, if not more important than it has been before, because it's harder to get your finger on the pulse of what's happening for somebody, like you said, if you're not bumping into them in the lunchroom or at the water cooler. And so it'll be easy to lose touch. So I know one of the techniques that Dr. White taught me is to always ask your team members, What is your preferred method of appreciation? Do you prefer loud high fives and company-wide emails? Do you prefer a quieter thank you? Do you prefer a Starbucks gift card or, you know, what we can all touch again, a physical high five? You know, but you have to understand what people need in order to feel appreciated, because otherwise in any climate, now or otherwise, you can lose your key players because of lack of appreciation.
Yeah, this has always been an issue. And I like what Dr. White says about that, about appreciating your people. Because I think a lot of people, managers, think it's all about motivation and rewards. So, you know, how can I reward this person to give them something that's going to motivate them? You know, I think that really it comes down to the job has to motivate people. It's got to be the work and the workplace and coworkers, the team that people work with and the job they do. And the purpose that you have as an employee, like, am I doing good in the world? Am I really doing something that's valuable here? So I think that ultimately the motivation comes from that. And when a manager shows appreciation, like Dr. White suggests, that is so important that you actually take time to, you know, thank your employees. Just thank them verbally. I mean, this used to be done not that long ago. You know, people would actually handwrite thank you notes. And that's one of the most powerful things you can do as a manager. And maybe you can't really handwrite them right now. But again, through these platforms like Slack or through an email or voicemail, or just make a call. Reach out to your people and appreciate them. Thank them for the good work they're doing. And, you know, keep that culture alive. Keep that when everybody's distributed, everybody's scattered about. They're not, you know, inside of the building. Inside the office, it's really important to keep that culture alive and that culture of appreciation.
And you just touched on something else that it made me think of, and that's reciprocal feedback. I know a lot of times employers and leaders will give feedback to the people that they're leading or managing. And so rarely do we actually get feedback as the leader on, is our method working? How is our style working? What could we be doing better as the leaders in the organization or the managers that would allow us to have greater workability with our team members? Because to your earlier point, so many people find themselves in these leadership and managerial roles with little to no training. And they can go 5, 10, 20 years without even realizing that they might have a blind spot in their leadership or managing style. And I know one thing that I personally took on years ago that I found to be very helpful in the form of reciprocal feedback is when I would sit down to do my team's one-on-one reviews every year, I would also give them an opportunity to give me feedback. You know, where have I surprised them? Where have I disappointed them? What can they count on me for? What can't they count on me for? And what's their impression of me now and then? And I think it really helps give you a 360-degree view of how are you being successful or not as a manager. And I think that's hard to know if we don't actually get the feedback from the people we're working with.
Yeah, and you need that perspective, that 360-degree perspective, because you hear it from your boss, you're going to hear it from your manager, whoever that may be. They're going to tell you what they think you're doing right and what they think you're doing wrong. But I think even more important is what your people think, the people who work for you, what do they think you're doing right and wrong? And, you know, it's hard to get that feedback. It's not easy for someone who works for you to provide that unfettered, candid feedback without, you know, fear of making you mad, retribution. Is my boss going to hate me and fire me and whatever else? So you really have to make it safe. You have to make it a safe place to give that feedback. And I know a lot of companies, obviously, they have confidential, anonymous 360-degree reviews of managers from their people, so that you can't tell who gave you that feedback. But I think if you can create an atmosphere, an environment where people feel safe to provide you with candid feedback, that's even better, because they'll give you the exact situation. They'll tell you exactly what they're feeling and how it affected them. And that's, I think, more important than just sort of a broad blanket, anonymous 360 kind of review.
Got it. And so tell me, are there any other tips or techniques that you talk about in the book, Wait, I'm the Boss, that you would recommend to people who are newer to the leadership world?
I think part of it, it's really important as a new manager, and really for any manager, but definitely as a new manager, is to be optimistic and positive. I used to work in different organizations, both as an employee and then later as a manager. And there's always people who are the bad apples, the ones who kind of spoil the bunch of apples, the barrel. But I always think that managers, they set the vision, they get people excited, they inspire people, and everybody wants to work for an inspiring leader, an inspiring manager. I mean, I'd much rather work for someone who inspires me, who is positive, who's optimistic about the future, who sees the glass half full instead of glass half empty. So I think one of the key things that any manager, newer or established, is to be positive. And these days, that's so important, even more so than ever. Whenever all the news around us is so negative and people are just worried, people are afraid. But even in a normal situation, being positive goes so far for any manager.
I think that's a wonderful point. And it's not just being positive, it's actually observing the filter that you see yourself and your team through. I know I made the mistake many years ago of I had somebody who disappointed me. That person made one mistake, and then that person made a second mistake. And I, came to the conclusion that, here's a laundry list of reasons of why this person can't do their job right. Until one day, my business coach came along and said, Jen, what if you're creating this person to be a disappointment? Well, you can imagine, Peter, wow. I was not very happy with that idea. I was petulant and angry and righteous and had all the reasons in the world why that was not the case. And he said, fine, Jen, if it's not the case, then it won't do any harm for you to look for one good thing that person does every day for a week and acknowledge that person for what that person did well. And I tell you, Peter, it was one of the humblest pieces of pie I ever had to eat, because at the end of 1 week of looking for the good in that person, rather than constantly nitpicking the things that the person was doing wrong, that person went on to become one of our most successful team members.
I really think about that, but you really do create the world around you. You create the environment. And as a manager in an organization, you create the culture, you create the environment, and so much of it is your creation. So if it's not bringing you what you think it should be bringing you, you should be looking at yourself and asking yourself if you're playing a role in that. That's just a terrific, self-assessment to see how you're contributing to that result.
Yeah, and it's not to make yourself or anybody else wrong. It's simply to observe it, to go, not that this is true, but how could this be true? And, there was another great analogy that my business coach shared of neuro-linguistic programming. Are you familiar with it all, Peter?
Yes.
Yeah. For anybody out there who's not aware of it, it's NLP is the short terminology for it. And one of the things that he discussed is in NLP, and scientists, I've actually since studied some neuroscientist work that says every second we're bombarded with billions of bits of information per second. And yet of those billions of bits, we're only paying attention to a couple of thousand, if only maybe even 100, or it's a little bit over 100. I think it's 141 bits per second. But the numbers are astounding. And then that begs the question of what is choosing the bits of information that we pay attention to, and what happens to all of those other billions of bits of information that go by the wayside. So that's why I'm always personally engaging in that inquiry.
That's great. Yeah, that's really amazing when you consider how much information is coming at us that we just don't even register. It just gets lost.
Yeah. And, it's funny, actually, Don Hoffman, one of my favorite professors at UC Irvine, wrote a new book called A Case Against Reality. And I was fortunate enough to interview him and Deepak Chopra about their respective new books. Wow. And Don actually argues in his book that we are actually not designed as human beings to see reality as it is. We're designed to get from an evolutionary game theory something called fitness points, which means what's going to give me the quickest reward and how will I survive. So our perceptions are skewed by, it's a whole complicated thing. I had to reread Don's book about four.
That's good.
But it's interesting when you actually think about that stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, we are products of our evolution. That's for sure. We are, you know, have very deeply buried genetic, you know, patterns that have developed over time. And they come out in the workplace too. They come out as within us as leaders and managers.
Absolutely. Well, do tell us, Peter, were there any takeaways or anything I didn't get to ask you today that you'd love to leave our listeners with today?
I think the thing that's most on my mind right now is that managers, you know, new managers, established managers, you know, now more than ever need to be human and to really empathize with your people, to, you know, to reach out to your people. And like I said earlier, over-communicate as opposed to under-communicate. I think we really, you know, humanness, being human is just absolutely critical today. It's always critical. It's always important. But I think now in a crisis situation that we're in right now, and other crises that we've faced over time, that humanity that makes us, you know, reach out to others, that builds those bridges of trust. And, you know, business is all about trust. It's all about building relationships with customers, with your employees, with vendors, communities that you're doing business in, with the world as a whole. So I think being human and remembering your humanity is the most important thing I can think of right now.
I think that's so beautiful and so on point, Peter. I think that regardless of anything, whether it's one peer to another peer, a manager to a peer, a manager to somebody who they're supervising, or even somebody who is looking up to their manager, I think it's important to have compassion for ourselves. Like you said, give ourselves permission to be human during this time, because, you know, it's taking a lot of our strength and courage to face obstacles we've never thought we would see in our lifetime or any lifetimes, quite frankly. So I think that's brilliant advice, Peter. And I think everybody should go check out your book. So do tell our listeners, where can they find, I'm the boss.
Well, I suggest going to my website, petereconomy.com. And on the main page, there's a link to take a look at the preview of the book and then a link to Amazon where you can actually buy a copy.
Perfect. I love it, Peter. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. I know that I definitely learned some great tidbits from you and takeaways, and I'm intending our listeners did as well. And thank you so much to everybody who tuned in today. I hope you got something of value today. And, you know, my heart goes out to everybody out there who is impacted by loss of jobs. I'll continue to share different articles on the Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook of anything that might be helpful or beneficial for anybody out there job hunting. And I'll see if I can share. I think you just wrote a great article, Peter, on resume writing that I saw on LinkedIn recently, right?
Yes. Yep. Just popped up there.
Perfect. Yeah, I'll have to be sure to share that. Peter just wrote a great article on that as well. And, you know, we just have opportunities to innovate now and find new ways to find work and to create and innovate during this time. There are still needs. They're just different needs than we've ever had before. And in the midst of all of this, too, I want to invite everybody. We actually have HeartMath. I'm not sure if you're familiar, Peter, but Roland McCready, who's the director of the HeartMath Institute, is going to be facilitating a global meditation for us this coming Monday. It'll be Monday, the 20th of next week, on awaketvnetwork.live. That'll be at noon Pacific. And every Monday at noon Pacific, you'll be able to catch another coalition member for the Coalition for Global Unity, such as Deepak Chopra, Michael Beckwith, and many other world leaders will be facilitating these weekly meditations. For the full upcoming schedule of teachers, you can go to coalition, the number 4, globalunity.com. And also, Roland has a new series that's going to be airing on HeartMath that's going to be airing on Awake TV Network. And it's a HeartMath series about how we can navigate these trying times. And that'll be airing. It's a new series starting this Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. So the good news is there are lots of wonderful things happening in the world. I know globalcoherencepulse.org is also doing a global meditation this coming Saturday at noon Pacific time. So please do check out all of these amazing people, because right now I think what we need as human beings is to come together, to support one another, and to unify our field of consciousness to help uplift and inspire one another during these trying times. So my heart goes out to everybody. Please feel free to share this episode. I know Peter offered a lot of great advice on there. You can find the episode later in the week on iTunes, or you can also go to latalkradio.com and go to the Get Yourself the Job page, where you'll find the archive for this show as well as all of our prior shows for the last 4 years. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks so much for being here with us today, Peter.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I had a great time.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Take care.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.